Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning. Welcome to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we want to inform, inspire, and impact you by the people you hear who are doing great things and making a big impact in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. It's no secret that our country is dealing with a lot of very challenging issues today, and our goal on every show is to provide information about a particular challenge that our community is facing, and then, perhaps more importantly, share some solutions, some ideas for change that people and nonprofit organizations are providing so that we can focus not on the problem, but on the solutions. One particular challenge that we face, not only here in Milwaukee, but nationwide, is addiction. It's a serious problem that affects millions of people every year. According to 2024 substance abuse and addiction stats, 46.8 million Americans, that's a little over 16%, age 12 and older, battled a substance use disorder in the past. Now, when I first heard that stat, I had to go back and check because, yes, they did say age 12 and over. Now, it's important to know the facts that better understand how specific substances can impact people's lives. So, for example, alcohol is the most popular drug in the United States, with nearly half of Americans, again, 12 plus, saying that they used it in the last month. 16.8% of people are addicted to cigarette smoking, which I thought was much higher than that, actually, and 13.4% are cannabis users. We hear also about the crazy opioid epidemic, and that's at about 3.3%, and cocaine is about 1.7%. Most importantly, the stats on addiction show that if you're struggling with addiction, or you know of someone who is, you are certainly not alone. What I find interesting is that with almost 21 million Americans who have at least one addiction, only 10% receive treatment. So, the challenge, the very serious addiction problem of all kinds in our country, the solution, reach out to the various organizations providing help and find something that works for you or your loved one. There are tons of suggested solutions to this challenge, but like most things, you need to find what works for you. What is it that will make you want to make a radical change? My first guest today is Lindy Brill, Director of Business Development from Samaritan's Hand, a nonprofit who brings hope to the hopeless and healing for the hurting from drug and alcohol addiction. Welcome to the show today, Lindy.
Thank you for having me here today, Jill.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, tell us about Samaritan's Hand and how you serve the community.
Sure. So we are a nonprofit, faith-based, and when we say faith-based, we mean Christ-centered drug and alcohol clinic that serves adults in Sheboygan and the surrounding communities. We offer support through Bible studies, AODA support meetings, clinical groups, family support, and sober living.
Tell us how you got started.
So we got started, we like to say, with a couple folding chairs, a table, a Bible, and a call from Christ. As we look back 13 years, we see that Cully was called to start Samaritan's Hand. He was already involved in the drug and alcohol treatment, but realized there was a missing piece, and that missing piece was Jesus Christ. So he started it very humbly, and 13 years ago, we can see God's footsteps throughout it, Jesus's help, God's provision. We've grown out of three facilities. So now we can help people not just through meetings, but also in sober living situations where they can feel have housing and 24/7 support.
And aren't you reaching like 3,000 people a year?
Correct.
Yeah, that's remarkable. That's amazing. That's wonderful. Well, how important is Cully's story to your mission?
Cully's story of hope has helped so many see that Jesus is the answer. So when you said solution earlier, right away I go to, we tirelessly say, Jesus is the answer. And that the God-sized hole in our hearts that are filled with addiction can be filled with the hope and healing found in a relationship with Jesus Christ. We are actually excited to announce that we are currently working with an author to bring Cully's story to life and look forward to having that available to share with the world in early 2025.
Okay, well, tell us more about Cully's story then.
Sure. So Cully had started as a child. He had, you know what, I'm just going to tell you a story. Is that okay if I tell you a story?
That's fine.
When he was born, he was the delight of his mother and the fear of his father. He was just like all the other boys. He liked to play and have fun until he didn't. An adult family friend wanted to show him how to have fun, but it didn't feel like fun. It felt ugly, and it felt something painful inside and which he couldn't get rid of. He didn't know how to explain it. He didn't talk about it. He just wanted it to go away. It began with other kids, and they smashed his toys. And sometimes he smashed his toys on other kids, and that made the pain go away until it didn't. He watched his mother and how she dealt with pain. So at age 12, he began drinking, and that made the pain go away until it didn't. So when you say 12, that rung true. So he began to see, to use fear. He wasn't going to be afraid of pain, he told himself, until it showed up disguised as three teenage boys. So he stabbed one of them. And as the fear grew, he looked down at that bloody knife and thought, oh no, what have I done? And the pain grew. So he buried his face in a pile of cocaine and the pain stopped. Until it didn't. But there were others. Others that were in pain too. So he showed them how to kill the pain with cocaine and alcohol. So tell all your friends. Yes, he was making friends and making money. Lots of money. Until one of his friends wanted to steal his friends and his money. So he stabbed him in front of his friends. And he held up his bloody knife for all to see. Oh yeah, look what I can do, he said. And the power made the pain go away. Until it didn't. This is how his life of crime and punishment began. But this is not the whole story. These are the words of Cully Culleth, better known as Cully, the founder of Samaritan's Hand. After his troubled childhood, Cully got into boxing, but failed. His arms were too short. He became an all-star wrestler, racing through the ranks, flying first class around the country, riding in limos with Jake the Snake, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan. But all the success couldn't get rid of his internal pain, and the money just fueled his drug habit. He became the drug lord of Sheboygan County. He controlled all the drugs in the area, and when he ran out, he drove down to Miami to deal with the most nefarious criminals you can imagine. He had no fear, but he was going crazy. He walked into the police station with a loaded gun and was ready to kill or be killed. He should be dead, or he should have went to prison. Instead, he spent 1 year in a mental institution and got released on a technicality. He was homeless. He couldn't read or write, but he got a job as a garbage man. He slowly began getting his life together, and then he met a girl. That's right, it's a love story, too. And this is where everything began looking up. She brought him to church, even though he didn't care about church. He just wanted to marry her. And she asked Cully to meet with her friend from church, who Cully actually knew because he was an attorney. And Cully had run into a lot of attorneys over the years. And the attorney told him about Jesus, and Cully finally found the remedy for all of his pain, the love of Christ. What I've told you only amounts to about 10% of Cully's life. There's so much more, from his criminal activity to his glorious redemption and finally to his mission to help the hopeless and hurting. Cully has gone from Sheboygan's most wanted to Sheboygan's most needed by establishing Samaritan's Hand, the only faith-based drug and alcohol clinic in Sheboygan County.
Wow, that's quite a story. Talk about an impact story. Wow. Well, I said before that people need to find what works for them. Obviously, Cully did that, right? What is it that will help people make a radical change, what would you say, what is it that makes your approach, Samaritan's Hand approach to recovery, different from all the others that are out there?
Sure. So I think one of the biggest things is we take the onus off the person. So often you hear, like, I think when you look at the percentage of people dealing with addiction and the number of even people who return to it or have a relapse, that's a very defeating thought of, like, I can do this. Wait, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I can do this. Wait, I couldn't. Instead of, I can't do this, but Jesus can. So what we say is, you don't have to do this alone. Jesus can heal you, but you have to be willing to leave it at the cross. You have to be willing to be vulnerable and say, Jesus, I can't do this any longer. We see people have overdosed. We have a true story billboard section, and one of ours was someone overdosed 6 times, has been arrested over 20 times, and now he's going to school to be a counselor. When you've overdosed that many times, you wonder how much hope is left. And when they can meet Jesus and see that there's healing to be had and there is hope, even in the midst of all of that, that's why we see change and that's why we're different.
Mm. And you have mentioned to me before that you don't see recovery as overcoming, but you see it as surrender.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So I heard a stat the other day that said 20% of people say or they feel like they have no one to turn to in their hour of need. Very sad. I think we all understand that and can agree on how walking with someone or being there for someone through their particular challenge is so, so important. It's one thing to provide a program and say, okay, here you go. I hope this works for you. But providing support as they walk through it and being there to see and experience transformation can just be so wonderful and so effective, right? After our quick commercial break, Lindy's going to share how exactly Samaritan's Hand does that. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking with Lindy Brill, Director of Business Development from Samaritan's Hand. So I mentioned before the break a recent stat I heard that said 20% of people say they have no one in their life that they can turn to in their hour of need. Again, just very sad. Explain to us, Lindy, how you at Samaritan's Hand provide that additional help other than just offering them a class or a program.
Sure. So we offer sober living, our sober house being our 6 month stay program. So, and when we say 6 months, it's really a 6 month minimum stay. They can stay longer. It offers 24/7 support. They'll complete a clinical group as part of that. They'll attend Bible studies and support meetings. They actually will also go to church. That's part of the program. They can choose to go with the other residents. They can go with family, whatever they choose to do. Clients obtain a full-time job, and they participate in fellowship opportunities. So the image I have in my mind that I think is just the way, when I say fellowship, I feel like sometimes that word, you know, it's kind of a... it's
overused?
A, yeah. Yeah. So when we're standing in, if I'm in the kitchen at our sober house and the fridge is behind me and I can look into where they eat, it's a big rectangular table and above it is the Last Supper with Jesus on it, the picture of Jesus with the disciples at the Last Supper. And I think about the discussions that happen around that table and the healing that happens around that table over bread, over whatever they're eating that night. I can't help but think that that is such an integral part of their healing, that they literally become brothers and sisters. Or, well, at the house, they become brothers. But like if they come to our facility, let's say they're having a bad day, they can walk in and say, hey, I'm having a bad day. They're more than welcome to just walk in. We have a prayer room they can go in and pray. We have a room someone can just sit in with them with and talk. And sometimes they just come sit and hang out by the desk with us just because they need or they want fellowship. They want someone to be around them. So we want them to know that we're a family and that we're coming alongside of them. So that's what kind of the healing the whole person as part of our sober living looks like. After they complete that program, they can apply to our newest house, which is our transformation house, which we would consider that next step back into society. And at a point where I'm sure it's going on in Milwaukee as much as in Sheboygan County, there's a housing crisis. And when you're trying to help people that maybe have a past that doesn't have a credit history, job history, it gives them one more opportunity, kind of that next step, to still be in a sober living environment and have the support of those around them. They still go to programming with everybody. They can come to support meetings. In fact, this only God could do this, but the house is down an alley from our sober house. So they could walk down the alley and say, hey, guys, can I come hang out? And they're welcome to go in there and hang out with the guys. So it's we try to help them kind of reintegrate back into society through our living.
Nice. Well, let's say somebody goes through the sober house and they're there for 6 months and then they go to the transformation house and they are there for how long? They can be there for how long?
There's no time limit on that.
Okay. So there's no reason for them to cycle back through the sober house. Hopefully you're taking them through this transformative process.
God willing, yes.
Yes. And again, being an organization that walks with them, not like, okay, here's the sober house, here's some programs, have at it, and I hope you're successful. But you're walking with them through this journey.
Correct.
Of transformation. And I think that's so key, I think, to their success, right?
Amen.
Yeah. And so how are you funded then? So we talk about organizations who, most all organizations need donations in one form or another, and I'm sure you're no different, but explain to us how you are funded.
Sure. So we are 100% funded locally. We do apply for grants. So there are some grants we get, but also churches, donors. Our biggest event of the year is a gala that we have. We actually just finished it this year, but it is annual. It's been going on for more 13 years now.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, yep, that's our biggest fundraiser. But, yeah, we're really funded by, short answer, Jesus. People called to support the mission and help the least of these in our community.
Gosh, so many good things that you're talking about here that you guys are involved in. Let's say somebody's listening and they're interested in supporting Samaritan's Hand in some way, what are the options?
Sure, so financially, we accept donations through our website, which is samaritanshand.org. There's a donate button right on there. We keep it easy, but also our gala, if you're a fundraising kind of gala person, which some people just really like the galas, that's a great opportunity to come learn about our mission. We always have live testimonies there. And then a chance to give at the end.
And so do you typically have it at a particular time of the year?
It's typically first quarter. In the past, we've done it that way and plan to continue to do that.
Okay. And how can people help spread the word?
So back to some of the statistics that you had said. One statistic we look at is 1 in 4 households suffers from, is exposed to, or is otherwise impacted by addiction. And that's a lot of households. So just in Sheboygan County alone, we have 53,000 households. So that means 17,600 households in our county are experiencing it. And I realize Sheboygan County is quite a bit smaller than Milwaukee, and I don't have the households offhand, but I'm sure it's large. If someone you know is struggling with it, please tell them about it. So when we say spread the word, it's kind of a unique situation that we're in, that people don't necessarily live in a community and say, well, in case our family is suffering from drugs and alcohol, I need to know where I'd send them. But just if you know someone is, don't be afraid of the stigma from it. I think stigma is a word that's used a lot in addiction and mental health because we don't know how to address it. We don't know what to say. We don't want to offend anybody. Addiction doesn't come with a fever. It's not like, oh, they have 104 fever. They must be suffering from addiction. It's not an illness like that or a sin issue like that. So when you know someone needs help, have the courage to let them know. One image that comes to mind that I heard our board president say was, next time you're in line at, let's say, Culver's, because in Sheboygan we have a lot of Culver's, and there's 4 people in front of you, or more, count four and know that someone in that four is impacted by addiction. When you're sitting in a movie theater, look down the aisle and count four. Someone is struggling, whether it's themselves or someone around them. So just be ready for that opportunity to share that truth with somebody, that you can get help, that you don't need to suffer, that Jesus can help them heal.
And I think somewhere else it says that we need to be ready, right? Ready to give an account, right, of what we believe, what we believe. But I think, again, that it's so important because you can't always see it on someone's face, right? You can't look at someone and say, oh, and sometimes I'm sure you can. But sometimes, like you said, it might be a mother standing in line at the grocery store that is just dealing with it, what she might think very well, but it spills out maybe into her kids or into her husband or the people around her that she's suffering and struggling in some way. And so being ready, being at the ready to share information that you have, information you've heard of today, that if you find yourself in a situation where you can provide some help, maybe it's just telling somebody that help is available, and this is where they could possibly turn. So thank you, Lindy, for sharing all that great information. Tell our audience then, how can they reach out to you? You mentioned your website before, but what are some other ways that people can reach Samaritan's Hand?
Sure. So our phone number is 920-254-6922. We're also very active on Facebook, sometimes actually sharing testimonials on there, sometimes just celebrating whatever the national day is. So we try to keep it light. Some days we sometimes just share an encouraging Bible verse. And then other days we see something real and we share it. So a great place to just check out what we're up to, and maybe just a spot for encouragement if you need it.
And that's your Facebook page, so people should check you out. It's just Samaritan's Hand. Or is it Samaritan's Hand in Sheboygan? Or is there any other?
Samaritan's Hand Sheboygan.
Okay, so people can just do that. Just Google it. Yeah, you need to. Just Google Samaritan's Hand in Sheboygan. I'm sure that'll get you to where you need to be. So thank you very much, again, Lindy, for all the great information.
Thank you.
So we've talked about a very real, very aggressive problem or challenge that our county and our country deals with on a daily basis. And we talked about how one specific nonprofit is offering a solution. But addiction is not the only tough challenge that we face in our country. So stay tuned and we'll take on another challenge and discuss another solution after a short commercial break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is Jackie Drury, Executive Director of Anchor of Hope Wisconsin, who deals with a different challenge, but like the first one we discussed, it has the potential to change a life dramatically. Welcome to the show today, Jackie.
Oh, thank you so much, Jill. Just so excited to be here.
We're happy to have you here. Why don't you start by giving us a little history about Anchor of Hope and how it got started?
Oh, great question. So back in 2013, there was a group of people, or a couple of groups of people in the Sheboygan community that would do peaceful, prayerful vigils outside of a facility, of the abortion facility in Sheboygan. And they came to the point that if a young woman walked out of there and they didn't have weren't sure what they wanted to do, weren't sure what resources were available, they really didn't have a place to send that young mom. So very grassroots or origination. So from that group of people and a couple other groups in the community, a founding board was developed, and all of the legal paperwork and that fun, happy stuff was submitted, and this organization was birthed back in the fall of 2013. We actually started with the name of New Hope Pregnancy Center because that pinpoint focus was on that mom. And as we have grown and morphed, we realized that we changed our trade name to Anchor of Hope because we realized that we were the need and the service opportunities and potential was larger than the original vision.
Okay. And then what is it about Anchor of Hope that makes you especially proud to lead the organization?
I think for myself personally, and I think I speak on behalf of our staff as well, it is the impact in lives and the change. And it's helping someone see a potential that perhaps they couldn't have seen in themselves. When we face trauma and unexpected things in our lives, and you have that feeling of loneliness and that feeling of shock, I guess, in not knowing. And so trauma would be a part of that. Coming in and being able to provide professional, first of all, caring professional services that help de-escalate a situation and help someone make their best choice for themselves. I think on behalf of our staff, when they see someone, their eyes open and their hearts open to the possibility, they may have come in through our doors thinking, oh, this is my only option. This is my only hope. And just being able to slow that process down and for them to say, I can do this. I think I can with support. And just the change in lives, whether that's in our parenting side or whether that's on a mom's pregnancy that was unexpected, that heart change and that vision of someone being able to look and dig deep inside and really come up with something, I can do this. That's just such a beautiful, powerful thing. And I think not only myself, but our staff, just joy in that.
Mm, that's beautiful. Well, are you unique in the services that you provide as a pregnancy center?
I will say yes and no. We are unique in Sheboygan County. We are the only pregnancy medical center in Sheboygan County. However, across the state, across the nation, and across the world, we are part of something so much larger. So we are what's called a pregnancy medical center. So we operate under the standing orders of two physicians. We have co-medical directors. So part of our network involves a couple of national organizations that are Heartbeat International, CareNet, and also NIFLA. NIFLA stands for the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. They are actually a legal arm that helps with training some of our medical staff, but also helps with best practices and just standard operating procedures and things like that. So sometimes I think we're the best kept secret in town, and we shouldn't be. In Wisconsin alone, we have about 40 pregnancy medical centers that are in this state. If we look across the country, where there's about 2,700, and worldwide over 3,000. So our identity is similar to many, but we're all grassroots and community operated, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Well, okay, so it sounds like this pregnancy medical center, quote unquote, movement is bigger than most of us understand. So give us a little bit more history behind it and just help us to understand it a little bit better. You gave us a little bit of it, but okay, can you expand on that so people really understand that this is, it's bigger
great
than most understand?
Yes, great question. Great. Yes, and so, and the pregnancy movement has been around for 50 years. Heartbeat International was actually started in the late 60s, early 70s, and they were started as an organization to support moms in tough situations. Obviously, that was around the time of Roe v. Wade, and there were a lot of different things happening in our culture at the time, but there was a need to provide moms with support in tough situations. So what was happening was, well, let me just make a broader comment. Oftentimes, someone will walk through our doors and the comment will be, this is my only choice. And so let's back that up 50 years. And the resources in our communities and things like that weren't there. So that is how Heartbeat International got started. And then around the country, grassroots pregnancy centers started arising to support community members in these situations. And a lot of times they started with simple pregnancy tests and providing diapers and material support, because obviously finances is a reason, is one of the top three reasons why someone might make a termination plan. I can't provide. So that was kind of the impetus behind a lot of these centers starting. But as the movement grew, that's where the medical services were added and a lot more of the community support aspects. So, and it's grown to the numbers that I have shared earlier in the United States. And also, if we look at different communities, most college towns will have a pregnancy medical center. So what I always tell young people is that, like, we'll talk to seniors in high school. When you go off to college, if you need resources, look for them. They are going to be in your communities. So that's a little history of how the industry, I'm going to call it an industry, was both birthed and how it's grown. Because obviously, the like addiction that we talked about earlier, the need has not diminished.
Mm. Well, thank you for giving us that history on the pregnancy center movement. What would you say makes pregnancy medical centers different than from other sexual health clinics?
I would say first and foremost, we do not profit from any decision that someone makes. We are not trying to sell anything. Our heart and our drive is to provide a woman with all the medically necessary information that she needs for her best decision. Statistically, I've read as high as 67% of women who have made a termination plan later regret it at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. So our heart is, we're not trying to sell you anything. We are here to walk with you. We're going to love you, whatever choice, whatever decision you make. We just want to give you. So everything that we provide is free of charge, is at no cost to those that we serve. And there are a couple other nuances that we have. We talk a lot about what we call sexual risk avoidance, not reduction, but avoidance. If you're going to buy a car, you're going to buy insurance. If you're going to have a house, you're going to try to eliminate risk in as many areas as possible. So with our health and with our sexuality, whether it's diet, exercise, and heart health and things like that, well, our sexuality, there are ways that we can minimize risk as well. So our some agencies in our community struggle with the fact that we don't just hand out condoms and say, here, be safe, because it's a lot more nuanced. Our sexuality, what did our doctor say yesterday? Our sexuality has consequences, some good and some bad. Mm. And so we're a little more nuanced. So
those are some of the differences.
Yes.
There. And I think what's nice is you talk about giving women options.
Absolutely.
You know, and I had a family member go through a cancer scare, mm-hmm. and the doctor said, this is the point of action that I yes. think we should take. Mm-hmm. And had we not done our due diligence and found out what options exist, right. we mm-hmm. may have pursued an option that mm-hmm. we later regretted.
Yes.
And you talk about that percentage being quite high
yes.
among women who make that choice. So if we can then, if you guys, as you say, educate people and say you will love them whatever choice
Absolutely.
They make, but that you want them to be educated so that
Absolutely.
They can make an educated decision.
Absolutely.
I think that's so important.
Jill, can I just share one little thing? So
Absolutely.
In every pregnancy intake appointment, we present all three options. We present abortion, adoption, and we present parenting. Because if you're pregnant, those are your three options. You're either going to have a baby or you're not. If you decide to have a baby, you're either going to parent or you're going to make an adoption plan for that child. So we go through and we explain all three of the options. We offer them, would you like more information? So we very unashamedly lay it out there, put the cards in her hand, and empower her to make that decision. Because we also realize that please hear what I'm saying. If anyone can talk someone into something, somebody else can talk them out of it. So by allowing her to have the power and the information, you're not, it's hers.
Yeah.
Whether it's when she walks out of our doors, no one's going to influence her to make a decision against her core. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever heard the phrase mortal wound, when we do something that is against our core belief, That's a hard place to be. And so we want to just give her all the love and support and information that she needs for her.
Mm, that's wonderful. That's how it should be. Again, you know, we're just here. Same with the show. You know, we are providing information, and people will make a decision based on the information that they themselves have. Mm. And hopefully it is a decision they make and not someone making it for them, like you said. So thank you for that. Yes. We've talked at length about the medical services provided at Anchor of Hope, but the organization is so much more than that. Stay tuned and we'll dive into other support services that are offered and their impact after commercial break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm ending our interview today in our last segment with Jackie Drury, Executive Director of Anchor of Hope Wisconsin. So, Jackie, let's take that deeper dive and go into the other services that Anchor of Hope provides to families.
One of the relation-based aspects of Anchor of Hope services are our parenting classes, and we are super excited to walk with moms. Sometimes it's first-time moms. Sometimes it's moms that have had two, three, four, five, six kids, just through an education journey and a mentorship journey. And moms come to us through different avenues. Sometimes it's purely for education. Sometimes we have relationships with community partners like Family Court or our CPS workers that are actually referring moms to us. I'd love to share a quick story about a mom who in the last year or so came to us because she was referred by her social worker. She at that time did not have custody of her little beautiful daughter. I'm just going to call mom Sarah. Okay, so Sarah came to us, and the courts had kind of requested or required her that if she wanted to gain guardianship and work toward placement of her daughter, that she needed to complete some classes as well as find stable living and a few other things. And at the time that Sarah came to us, I think she had visits one day a week, supervised visits one day a week with her beautiful daughter. And she worked super hard. And I'm not discrediting Anchor of Hope's parenting classes. Mom worked super hard. She had a great social worker. She had a great mentor outside who would come with her to parenting classes. It was beautiful. As she continued to grow and stabilize and find a balance in her life, she got not only custody back, but she was in a transitional living home at the time. She's since moved out of that. She's got full placement. And walking with, like you asked earlier about the joy, walking with a mom just to see her journey. And God was a large part of that as well. She had some faith transition in her life. It was just beautiful to see that. And I think so the parenting classes are just a super huge benefit to our community, not just to this mom in particular, but to the community of Sheboygan. There are not a lot of opportunities in our community for free parenting resources, so we're able to do that. We also provide a lot of material support. Obviously, children are expensive. So if you need cribs, car seats, diapers, and things like that, we can help with that. One of the other aspects of Anchor of Hope services is that just recently we started with a community education program where we have two educators who are available to go into schools, youth groups, and community groups and just talk to young people about relationships. Jill, I think you mentioned earlier something about 20% of people feeling like they don't have someone to connect with. What we're seeing with younger people is we're such a technologically driven society that relationally we're kind of starving. And so what our education people can come in to and is help them, give them tools to assess, is this a healthy relationship? What are the hallmarks? What is the difference between love and what does lust look like? What does a boundary look like? And giving students a voice so that they can make their healthiest choices starting at a young age. We know statistically that the earlier a young person engages in sexual activity, it's a predictor of number of lifetime partners and a couple other factors in life. So even if we can delay help them make choices for themselves to delay that sexual activity. So we're excited about that program. And then also we offer what's called after abortion support. We understand that in our communities are so many moms and dads who that is a part of their experience, and perhaps they haven't had a chance to talk with someone to process, to heal. A friend of mine recently told me, she's a very faithful woman, she told me, I knew that God had forgiven me of my decision, but by going through the after abortion support program, she goes, I came to understand that healing is very different than forgiveness. And I think that is just such a beautiful thing to be able to offer, is an opportunity to sit down with someone, whether it's one-on-one or whether it's in a class situation with people who have a shared experience, and be able to process, just sit with that, and it's okay. Life is complicated.
And don't you have weekend retreats in that area as well?
Yes, and we just had a number that were up in the Wausau area for those. So there's all types of opportunities, and those can be faith-based or non-faith-based. So we offer a wide variety. Basically, we will meet an individual where they are at.
Okay. And you basically just want to let people know that the resources are there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't suffer in silence. Know that there are people there that can help you.
Right.
You just have to take that step and reach out.
Absolutely.
Right? So how do you know then that what you're doing is actually working? And what would you say is the overall impact that Anchor of Hope has had in the Sheboygan community?
I think the success stories help us see that what we're doing is working. And I'm going to separate those out right now. God has allowed us to walk with over 400 moms in our little community to choose life since we've started. And each life is the start of another generation. If we can just wrap our little heads around that, it's like, how beautiful is that? Mm-hmm. And then on the parenting side of things and on the support side of things, when we see moms like Sarah gain custody, we had a dad that we walked with, same thing. When we see those successes, and when our attorneys and social workers are reaching out to us and saying, we're going to send you XYZ because they could use the support that you guys offer. I think those are all indications of we're walking in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. With God's help, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And support. Right. So you said that all these services are free, correct?
Yes, they are.
We know that a lot of the things that you offer are actually not free. So how are you funded then?
Oh, thanks for asking that. And that's a very humbling thing. I'm going to go back to 2013 or 14. When we first started, they hired two people. And the gentleman that I worked with, he was told by the board of directors, we don't have a budget, and it looks like you're going to run out of money in September. So
welcome.
Right? Do you want the job or not?
Yes.
So, and I can say, Jill, that we have made and exceeded budget every year. And it is incredibly humbling to see this community, the Sheboygan community, stand behind life and a message of hope. And so we're funded through a lot of individuals, through churches. Just like my partner Lindy said, through churches, we write a few grants, and we also have a major event, typically in the fall of every year. But we have just been incredibly blessed.
I would ask you then what you think is the main message that you'd like to leave with our listening audience. So we talked about a lot of things today. If you were to sum it up, what would you say?
Be the one. And when I say be the one, when we face difficult things in life, be the one that listens. Be the one that knows what's in your community as far as resources. Be the one that looks at someone's face and says, hey, it looks like you're having a hard time today. What's going on? Can I help you? We talked about addiction and we talked about unplanned pregnancies today, and there's so much need in our hearts for one another and for community. So when I say be the one, I'm just asking humbly that we slow down and to really engage with people, to know that if someone is facing an unplanned pregnancy, it's like, it's okay. Take a breath. We'll get you the resources that you need.
And we'll figure it out together.
Absolutely. Right. And take a hand. Be the one and take a hand.
Wow. Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Well, I'd like to thank my guests today, both Jackie Drury, Executive Director from Anchor of Hope, Wisconsin, and Lindy Brill, Director of Business Development from Samaritan's Hand. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to Samaritan's Hand or Anchor of Hope, and they can help you or they can point you in the right direction. If you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think would be a great guest for the show, reach out to me at jill@ellenbecker.com. And you can also visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired shows. Take the time in your busy schedules to figure out how you can be the one so that you can be a blessing and give a blessing. Thanks for listening today, and have a great day.